Welcome to I'm Spiritual, Damn It. I'm your host, Jennifer Weigel, and joining me on the phone today, very excited to have author Terry Daniel. Terry has written three books, including Embracing Death, A New Look at Grief, Gratitude and God, and Turning the Corner on Grief Street. I love that title. How Trauma and Loss Can Transform Us. She's also the founder and president of the Afterlife Education Foundation and the producer of the annual Afterlife Awareness Conference. Terry, thanks for being on the show.
Thanks for having me. I'm happy to be here.
Now, I know because I've been doing research on you for the last couple of weeks or days, rather, since we've had this on the calendar, why you got into this work. But tell our listeners, Terry, what got you engulfed in, you know, learning as much as you possibly can about the afterlife and healing grief and everything that you do?
Well, it started many lifetimes ago, probably, but I was always a mystical, metaphysically minded kid. And was always interested in this stuff. I read the Tibetan Book of the Dead when I was 19, and this was just sort of a natural magnetic thing for me. Fast forward, and I'm now in my 40s, and my 10-year-old son is diagnosed with a life-threatening illness. Mm-hmm. So everything that I had known or studied or believed about life and death was now called into, not into question, but into examination. Mm-hmm. And I realized that everything I'd learned all these decades long did not falter or change one bit when faced with the death of my own child. I still believed that everything happens for a reason, mm-hmm. that there are pre-birth soul agreements between people, and I looked at this situation with my son as, how interesting. I wonder why this is happening for us, not to us,
right?
For us. Mm-hmm. And instead of saying, it wasn't like, oh, why, it wasn't like that. It was, why? And I learned that way of looking at things from all the spiritual study I had done. So my son had a progressively debilitating illness. I spent many years as a caregiver. He was severely disabled, mm-hmm. and he died when he was 16. And his death was beautiful and peaceful and pristine. And from there, I went on to become a hospice volunteer and to study everything I could get my hands on about death and the afterlife, eventually going back to school for degrees in theology and writing these books and starting the Afterlife Conference.
Now, it's interesting because for me, Terry, my father passed away from a brain tumor when he was 56 and I was 30. But the same kind of thing, I just engulfed myself in every sort of literature. I had always been curious from a very early age. And that was always there, but it just hit, you know, overdrive, I guess I would say, when you watch someone take their last breath. And as you say, it is beautiful, and it happened for you, not to you. A lot of people get into victim mode and woe is me, and how could this happen to me, and this isn't fair, and life isn't fair. And, you know, I had to interview a lot of people who died and lived to talk about it, to be quite honest, people who had near-death experiences that explain that it isn't over. It's just continuing in a different way. And so for you, I'm sure with all of your research that you bring to the table and continue to do, it doesn't really stop, does it? You just keep digging, don't you?
Absolutely. It never stops. And it's, you know, and one thing I tell people, because I do grief counseling now, is your relationship with the person who died has not ended. It has just taken on a different form. Mm-hmm. And if you can learn to be in that relationship in a different form, you won't be in a state of deprivation mm-hmm. and loss.
Right.
You'll just have to adapt to something else. It's just like getting divorced and having a continuing relationship with your ex because you have children and you have reasons to stay together. I mean, I'm not saying that a death is just like a divorce, but...
Well, it is in a way, I can say. Yeah, it kind of is. Having been through it, yeah it's pretty icky. But, you know, it's interesting, too, like you say, taking on a different form. So Dr. Mary Neal, who died in a kayaking accident, 30 minutes without oxygen. She's a pediatric surgeon, or, you know, she is an MD, right? And here she knows when you don't have oxygen for 3 minutes, you're toast, let alone 30. And so when she was in the light, she talked about how they told her there, look, all those wink coincidences, you're thinking about someone, then they call, or you think you're getting a sign, but you go, well, that's just a coincidence. It is not just a coincidence. It is something bigger. And the more you document it, wink it, acknowledge it, the more it starts to happen. Did you find that in your research, Terry, that our loved ones are sending us signs and signals all the time?
Oh, my goodness, yes. I mean, that's my first book, Swan in Heaven, was
yes.
all about the communications that yes. I had with my son after he died.
Exactly.
I knew that would be happening, so I was kind of expecting it. And I think the fact that I trusted that so much is what kept my conduit open so that I could receive his messages.
Yes.
And 30 minutes after he died, he appeared to me so clearly, like he was standing right there in front of me. And he basically said, okay, Mom, let's get this party started because I'm over here now and you're over there and this is what we plan to do. So get your ass up and we got books to write. We've got things to do. We got work to do. Let's get going.
So that's the other thing. It's like, okay, work still goes on over there. I thought you could just kind of kick back, order a sandwich and, you know, keep the remote in your hand and watch some movies. But apparently you have to evolve.
Yeah, apparently you have to evolve. Well, they didn't tell us this in
I know.
Judeo-Christian upbringing that most of us had.
Right.
And, you know, that's a whole big other part of my work now. That's why I went to school to get a theology degree, so that I could talk about these different images of the afterlife that we all grew up with and how, I don't want to say how false they are, but how limited they are, because image that we have comes from something somewhere.
So, Terry, I get a lot of flack from the religious community for doing interviews with people like yourself or other people who've died and lived to come back, or mediums or psychics or healers or you name it. And they usually list off, you know, Leviticus and all these Bible verses of what they believe the Bible is saying, that I'm going straight to the inferno for having these conversations. And, it's like the Bible came out of the sky and it's written form on pen and paper, let alone the fact that it was in a different language, chiseled onto templates, might have been some sort of, I don't know, misunderstanding of the translation, but don't get me started. You studying theology, what do you know to be some of the biggest misconceptions about sacred texts? I mean, first of all, everything that's been documented as, quote, sacred texts are regular people getting downloads from the big guy. You know, they're not like just a nun. It's like a kid or a, you know, or Moses or whatever. It's a regular person having that encounter. So why is it that people don't believe or trust that that can happen today? It can happen then, but it can't happen today? Help me understand
that. That's about 12 questions in one.
Yeah. But, so ready, go.
I'll start with the last one.
Okay.
So yes, it's definitely true about the downloads. And one of the things I like to say is, we can go back to the beginning of anything even transmitted orally.
Mm-hmm.
There were regular people receiving transmissions from the divine in various forms, from ancestors, loved ones, angels, whatever you got out there in the universe.
Right.
Absolutely, people received those transmissions. The ones that sort of went platinum in our culture, you know, would be Moses, would mm-hmm. be Muhammad, would be the Course in Miracles,
yep.
would be various Old Testament prophets like Isaiah and Ezekiel. I mean, these guys were walking around having visions all the time.
Now, do you think they were just eating shrooms, or do you think they were really getting visions? Yeah, a little both.
They might have been eating shrooms, or they might have been eating moldy bread,
right.
moldy rye, which would be LSD. So.
Right. Okay, cool.
Or they were just out there, and they were mystics.
Right.
I mean, there are mystics in every tradition. So what happened is these guys would go around and tell their stories, and it started to get organized around 500 BC
mm-hmm.
when the people known as the Israelites were enslaved in Babylon, and that's when they actually started writing down everything, because it was all oral before that.
Mm-hmm.
And for the next 500 years, the Old Testament got formed, and because they were in this political struggle at the time, it became political.
Right.
And a lot of the mysticism just never showed up again. And then, of course, then we had when Jesus showed up, and he was, of course, a mystic. But when they got hold of his teachings and started spreading it around and writing it down, it became political once again. So we don't know anything about what Jesus really said. No, but none of the
scholars. Well, it was a PR. What people don't understand is that those books were put together like a PR scheme, right? They chose
exactly.
which ones to put together for the message that they wanted to get people back in the church, because people were going and practicing in the woods and they were going to other places, and they wanted to put the fear of God literally in them to get them back in the church, correct?
Well, not to get them back in the church. There was no church.
Okay, well, to get them back into their belief system so that they would fear.
It was a new belief system, so there wasn't. It wasn't going back into anything.
Okay.
It was to try to sell this new idea of one God in the sky that rules over everything. Now we're going back a little further into the Old Testament, but prior to that, people were, quote, pagans, and it was a nature-based thing. If you live in the natural world on the earth, your gods are going to be the sun and the rain and the plants and the animals and the things that keep you alive.
Right, sure.
That's going to be God. And then this idea of monotheism came along where there's this one dude who rules over all that stuff, and he created the sun and the animals and the sky. So that really threw a wrench in the works of the nature-based people, because how could they possibly comprehend something being higher than nature?
Sure.
So that was what the conflict was. And so they wanted people to believe that there was something above
the trees
everything
and the
that
sun.
We already knew, above the trees, literally above. Yeah.
But then when we get to Rome and people trying to get back to, you know, when the Catholic Church and people are splitting camps in that department, and Presbyterian, Lutheran and all that stuff, you know, they were, I mean, again, I didn't study theology like you did, but I've had many conversations with many ministers and priests, and they all, you know, their way is the only way. And it just gets so exhausting because it's all one. We're all one. God is one. It just baffles my mind to think that we have all these divisions and that we're killing over, you know, over which source is right, you know, in thou shalt not kill.
And the people doing the killing are the ones who haven't even spent 5 minutes studying the sources or looking at any of it.
Right.
One thing that I say a lot in my workshops is, in our culture, most of us create our image of God when we're 5 years old, because we learn it from our family, from church, from Sunday school, from movies, and we get this image when we're five. And we never go back and revisit it and tweak it or evolve it in any way. We just kind of sit with it.
Mm-hmm.
We have this five-year-old idea of how this works. And then one day we're 45, and something terrible happens, like we get cancer, or our child dies, or we lose our job, or our house burns down, and we start saying to God, what just happened? This wasn't supposed to happen to me, because I was a good little boy or girl, and I did all the right things, and this God in the sky was supposed to protect me.
Right.
And the problem is, we carry this infantile 5-year-old Sunday school vision of God with us, and we're not given much opportunity to question it.
Exactly.
As
Carolyn Mace told me, we have this belief in a conditional God. I'll be, if I'm a good girl, then ... And that's not what it is. It's, you know, how do you know that suffering isn't God's plan for you? And like you talked about earlier, how do we not know what that might be our divine path this time? Because as you mentioned,
the Buddhists know.
Yeah, right. They know.
Buddhists know.
They got that download.
Yep.
So for your work these days, Terry, when you do, you know, the conferences, the annual Afterlife Awareness Conference, tell me what that consists of. People gathering and you informing and educating people about life going on when it feels like it's not going on, or is it a lot of different
things?
Well,
it's not just me informing. We have lots and lots of speakers.
Sure.
In fact, I'm hoping to actually invite Carolyn Mace for 2017. I've got somebody working on that for me right now. Maybe you could help me with that.
Okay.
But we get, we've had Raymond Moody and Eben Alexander and Anita Morjani, who are all very well known.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
World of near-death experience. Last year we had Bishop John Shelby Spong, who is a huge hero of mine. He's an Episcopal bishop that talks about how silly and stupid biblical literalism is.
Nice.
And so he's become a big supporter of ours. We have, just for example, next year, a researcher who just wrote a book called A Traveler's Guide to the Afterlife.
Mm-hmm.
And he did research all over the world on what different minor religions think about the afterlife. So like obscure African tribes and obscure Chinese sects. And so all these different ideas, which makes us realize that the only way we know what happens after we die is when somebody comes back and tells us.
Mm-hmm.
And you know that cliche, no one's ever come back from the dead and told us. Well, yes, they have many times.
That's right.
And so that's what we talk about. We also have hospice doctors and hospice nurses and people talking about the physical aspects of death, end-of-life care, what it's like to die, legal aspects, you know, physician-assisted death, green funerals, home burials. I mean, it's just this huge, wide range of everything. And all that information can be found at afterlifeconference.com.
Afterlifeconference.com. Okay. And the next conference is when, Terry? In 2017?
June 1 through 4.
Okay.
Perfect. 2017 in Portland, Oregon.
And you're going to be in Evanston at the Chicago Ions coming up. Is that September 10th you're going to be joining
it's
us?
October.
Okay.
I think it's October 8th and 9th.
8th and 9th, exactly.
The 8th, I'm going to, that's a Saturday, I think, I'm giving a talk to the IONS group, and I'll be talking about this exact same thing.
Yep.
And then on the 9th, I'm doing a four-hour workshop called Grief as a Mystical Journey.
Great.
Which is for people who are struggling with grief and doing more mystical, ritual, deeply spiritual practices to deal with grief.
And that, is Thomas John joining you for that on the 9th as well?
Yes.
Okay, great.
Yes, he is. He's going to be our evening medium.
Fantastic. He's been a guest here on the program, and we've been doing shows together as well up at the Wilmette Theater. So excited that you guys will be teaming up together, because Thomas is really quite something. And for a lot of people, and maybe you've experienced this too, Terry, when they meet somebody who has, you know, a different wiring. And I say that about a lot of these people, from those who have lived through a near-death experience, right? They come back with spidey senses, almost like the heightened, some sort of, I have a friend who's had two near-death experiences, and his antenna is just on, you know, on overdrive. He can get some senses, and, you know, he walks through nature, and then it's really like kapow. He'll just call me with a download and say, hey, just wanted you to know. And we all can mock it or make fun of it or whatever, but how do you explain someone who can do math problems like a math whiz, or someone like Michael Jordan who can make so many baskets? We all have a different skill set. We all have a different talent, and not everybody is wired the same. We're all wired differently, and that's something Anita Morjani said, is that we have to honor all of our differences, embrace them, and know that we have them. And so for you, I wonder if in your work you encounter people who have one of these healings, like maybe through a meeting with Manhattan medium Thomas John, or through a conversation with Evan Alexander or whatever. They have an experience that they just are so amazed by, and they're convinced there's more going on. And then they go back to their regular life, and then somebody tells them it's all a bunch of hooey, like Penn and Teller. It's all BS. And there's nothing to it. And go back to your world and get a reality grip and da-da-da-da. And then all that wonderful healing stuff that happened just goes right out the window. I see it all the time. Do you see that in your work as well?
No, actually, I don't.
Yay!
By the time people come to me for counseling, or, you know, for the conference, they might be in the middle of reckoning with that.
Sure.
But my experience has been, is once you have stepped onto that level, you can't really go back. You can pretend to go back just to keep your friends and family happy.
Right.
But the soul can't go in reverse like that. So some people, they might say, I'm not sure.
Mm-hmm.
But I know what I experienced. I know that medium really brought me a message from my mother about things that nobody could possibly know but me. I know that happened. And then, you know, some of them do take a while to completely embrace it. But I've never seen somebody who truly had a spiritually transformative experience that went back to the darkness.
That's great. That is great. Because I have, unfortunately, with my shows with Thomas John, we have seen that. And they have this unbelievable experience where he brings forth things that, again, it's the whole, if you can't Google that shit, that's my term. If you can't Google that shit, then it's like, whoa. And as a journalist, I want my sources to be someone you can call on the phone, preferably a landline. Thank you very much. You want it to be tangible evidence, and some things cannot be explained. And I'll give an example. Recently, we did a show just on August 20th with Thomas at the Wilmette Theater. Afterwards, he came across the street. We were at the Valley Lodge across the street, all having an adult beverage. And a gentleman was standing across from where I was sitting, and Thomas walked in. He was waiting for a ride to come pick him up. And he just looked to the man to his right and just said, "Who's Larry and Bernadette and Alice?" And barrels all these names out with a man he'd never met, wasn't even introduced to, didn't even get the guy's first name, just boom, boom, boom.
Yeah,
gave him like a quick fire 6-minute Insta reading. And it was, and the guy just looked, and he said, what the heck just happened? And then Thomas just left. You know, it was like he was in and he was out. And another man was standing next to him saying, I know, man, that's how I felt when I got called on in the theater, because Thomas called on this gentleman in the theater, and this gentleman had lost his wife to ovarian cancer and, you know, had remarried. And it was very, very emotional for him as well. Also, slightly on the skeptical pond, barely dipping his toe into the woo-woo water, you know, but could not possibly discount what just happened and what came through. So for you and your work, as you've written these books and you continue to get signs from your son, how is your son communicating with you most these days? I know it probably changes, and you wrote about it, of course, in A Swan in Heaven, but today, how is he, changing things up? What did he go from showing up in a vision to sending you hawks or cardinals, or how are you getting your messages?
Exactly. Yeah, no, it's changed so much. And when that started to happen, I really, you know, didn't know to expect that. Mm-hmm. And it was really sad. It was like a form of grief.
Sure.
Because it wasn't like he was standing next to me breathing on me. Like, I used to be able to feel his breath.
Wow.
It definitely changed. And fortunately, when that started to happen, I was already deeply involved in the Afterlife Conference. I think we're into our second or third year. And I had become friends with many of the top mediums. Mm-hmm. And I could ask them, what's happening? And they said, well, the relationship is changing, just like any relationship. Mm-hmm. When you have a five-year-old child, when he's 12, your relationship isn't the same as it was when he was five. All relationships change. So that's all that's happening, just like a marriage, like any relationship. So that really helped. And so now what he does is I call him the man behind the curtain in The Wizard of Oz.
Sure, sure.
He's like behind the curtain turning the little knobs. I know that everything that I do, and a big part of it was going to school, is driven by him, because if it wasn't for him, I wouldn't be here talking to you right now, and I wouldn't be doing this work. So he's pushing me. He's sending me to school just like I sent him to school when he was a little kid.
That's
wonderful. He's like literally, you know, shoving me out the door, handing me my lunchbox and saying, you know, go to school and go do this. And you know, he absolutely, his words come through me when I'm talking about this. He's just putting the words in my mouth. I am channeling him, but it's gotten to the point where I can't feel the difference between his words and mine anymore.
And that's lovely, because, you know, some people would say, oh, well, then maybe it's also one of your guides, or, you know, maybe it's not your son. Maybe he's got a place filler.
Well, and maybe he does.
Yeah, yeah.
And you know what I learned about that? Because when I first started channeling him, there was another person present with us, a guide that he introduced me to, and it was very different hearing from the two of them.
Interesting.
And then it was also very different just hearing my own thoughts. I could clearly identify what was coming from where. It's all turned into a big pot of soup now, and I think that was a big piece of what I was supposed to learn, is because we're all one, ultimately, our channeled messages are all part of the same energetic continuum.
Right.
And so everything that I'm saying to you now, some of it's coming from him, some of it's coming from other guides, some of it's coming from me, some from ancestors. It really doesn't matter who's saying what at a particular level.
Have you heard of Paul Selig, S-E-L-I-G?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, of course. Yeah. So Paul was on this program as well, and he talks about, you know, he was a professor at NYU for 25 years, really had to keep this in the closet, like, hey, getting some channeling. You know, you don't exactly want to bark that one from the top of every tall building in New York. And so he said now he has about 9 guides, and some of them swear, and I love that. I mean, it's like he's just flying through and getting these downloads, but like you say, they're all connected. So he doesn't care if it's from guide 4 or guide 8. One of the 9 are giving him a message that he knows he needs to speak, and it needs to come out. And so for you now, as you travel and do your talks, you know, what do you absolutely need to say every time? What do you know for sure that you want to get out to those groups and to those rooms that people are going to hear you say on the 8th and the 9th when you come here to Chicago?
Well, the basic thing, of course, is that we don't die.
Yep.
That, you know, if I had to pick one thing, that would be it. And the other thing, which is now more of what I'm focusing on with this grief work, is that we don't have to suffer through loss.
Mm.
You know, there's a certain amount of suffering, but if we can re-perceive our attachments and our relationships and our experiences in a different way, then when those things are shaken up, when our assumptions are shattered about how life is supposed to be, we can learn how to use non-attachment,
right,
and relinquishing to deal with our losses. So number one, there's no death, nobody dies. But to me already at this point, that's like old news.
Sure, absolutely.
You know, I mean, you mm-hmm. don't want to stand in front of an IANS group and tell them that.
Right.
They laugh at you, right?
They've already drunk the Kool-Aid. They're good.
Yeah, they're
okay.
Way beyond that. You know, so, and that's one of the things that's important about the conference is we want to go beyond that.
Right.
We don't want to just stand there and say, hey, guess what? You can talk to dead people.
Right.
Like, duh.
Yeah.
That's not new. So what are we going to do next? That's the other big piece I like mm-hmm. to say is where are we going to go from here? What are we going to do with this? We've got, I've had this conversation with Raymond Moody a bunch of times. We've got 10,000 recorded documents of near-death experience. How many more do we need?
Right. No kidding.
What else, what are we going to do? Just tell the stories over and over again? We have to do something with this knowledge.
Right. It's funny. I shared a bus. We were both, Raymond and Eben Alexander and I were all speakers at the Sun Valley Wellness Festival a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
And so we spent a good amount of time together chatting about just what we're talking about. And it, same kind of thing. It's like, yeah, okay, how many times are we going to hear? But the shocking one was always the children. Because, you know, adults could compare notes. For the skeptics that are out there, they could say, oh, well, the adults got a bunch of near-death experience books and they read them and then so they know what story to tell. But a two-year-old doesn't. A four-year-old doesn't, a six-year-old doesn't,
right.
And they all have the same, very similar stories as well. So for those who haven't read a lot of books on this, Terry, what can you tell our listeners about what happens? What are some of the similarities and through lines about what happens when the spirit gets over to the other side?
Well, there's so much similarity. That's what's so wonderful about the near-death research that mm-hmm. we have is we don't see a lot of contradiction.
Right.
And that's what makes it so viable. Is mm-hmm. And not everybody has the same experience. Not everybody sees a tunnel and or whatever.
Right.
But everybody reports there are certain things that are absolutely consistent from one to the other, even the little kids.
Right.
You know, Melvin Morris did his research with children, and they said things like, and these were really little kids, like three,
right.
who had near-death experiences. And they said things like, I flew up to the sun, and it hugged me and told me it loved me.
Right. Right.
Which is basically being in the light and feeling love.
Unconditional
so
love.
There's a
yeah.
lot of consistencies.
Right.
And we also have accounts of people who had very bad experiences. And so you'll hear people say, oh, no, I believe in hell. I died and went to hell.
Mm-hmm.
There was suffering and torment and people screaming. I mean, people will tell you that. And instead of poo-pooing that, what I say is, in the life review process, which apparently everybody has, you can, depending on what your life is and what your fears are and your baggage and your projections, you can go through a period of discomfort and
mm-hmm.
stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not eternal. It's not forever. It's just a door that you walk through. It's a cleansing that we all have to go through. And if we have a lot of really heavy stuff to cleanse
yep.
before we fully die into the light, then we're going to have that kind of experience. We have to remember with near-death experiences, they didn't stay dead. They only got their foot in the door.
Right.
And then they came back. So what we hear from these stories, it's only the first glimpse. And sometimes the first glimpse is not beautiful and pleasant.
Right. Especially if you lived your life with, you know, it's like that whole boomerang thing. What you put out comes back. So like you say, the life review, that could be heavenly or that can be hellacious, depending on how you lived your life. You know, you feel everything that you have put out there. So all of that will be reviewed and felt and experienced again. And if you put out a lot of angst and hate and trauma, that's what your review would be. So people getting a little taste of that, they're getting that preview in the movie theater, you know, of trauma and grief. Well, whoops.
Yeah.
So I, you know, from so many people where I've interviewed in that space, I try to remember that, you know, as you go through your day, we're still human, right? We're going to have moments where we're going to get frustrated, where we're going to have a temper flare up or whatever. We react to things that humans would react to. But I always then try to go back to getting centered and quiet and thinking, what do I want to put out and project out right now? And it can still be frustrating. We still have to feel our feelings. And like you talk about with your counseling with people who experience a loss, we can't just try to bury it and not feel it. But then there's the dwelling on it part too. So it's that hard mix of experiencing your feelings, but then not letting them take over. Correct?
That's right. Well, and that's where we get into what I'm going to be doing at this grief workshop in mm-hmm. Chicago, which is, you know, one of the things that I've done is studied shamanism. And I learned from shamanism how important ritual is for clearing energy out of the body. So the way you don't get stuck in grief mm-hmm. is I'm a really big believer in that grief counseling doesn't work. It doesn't accomplish anything. There is some benefit to sit around and talk about your feelings. Certainly, it is important to be heard. Mm-hmm. But then you have to do something symbolic. You have to do some sort of ritual or symbolic act to move the grief out of your body. So mm-hmm. that's what we do in the workshop. So even something as simple as lighting a candle and saying out loud, I release my pain into mm-hmm. the light.
Right.
And as the heat and smoke from the candle rise up, you just kind of take your arms and raise them up and say, I release my pain. Even a simple little thing like that will actually make a difference. That's what's missing in our culture, is that we don't have ritual actions
right.
to act out the releasing of the pain. All we do is go to these little grief groups and sit in a circle and tell our story over and over again, which becomes pathological.
And after yes, and as Carolyn May said, you tell it more than three times it should be released, and after that it just causes more pain. The more you tell it, you relive it, and then you're refilling it.
It doesn't automatically release by telling it three times.
True.
I think you have to do the rituals mm-hmm. along with it.
Exactly.
Because if telling it automatically released it, then all these people who tell it over and over again would be totally
would be done.
Clear.
Yeah, no, it's true. So there has to be more to it. Susan Forward, who wrote the book Mothers Who Can't Love, and mm-hmm. she talks a lot about the cognitive therapies that she teaches people, and the one that she finds very helpful for a lot of people is, you know, writing down, you know, old belief systems of what you believe about yourself or things that didn't serve you, right? It could be grief, it could be mm-hmm. feelings, whatever. Writing those down and then having a ceremony and burning them outside of your home, not in your toilet, not in your garbage, but just going somewhere, a fire pit, whatever, burning them, releasing it, and then writing down a new set of belief systems and attaching that to a balloon or a lantern or something and going to a sacred place that you feel happy, that makes you feel good. And reading them out loud and then letting them go and surrendering them and watching them float up into the sky and have at it. And she says that she gets a lot of her clients that have a lot of relief from something like that. Would that be something you would coach people to do as well?
That's exactly what I coach people to do. Mm-hmm. And that's where, you know, and again, with the shamanism piece, you know, I feel that my son led me. It's a long story how I got into the shamanism training, but it was magic. And, you know, he led me to this because I needed this ritual piece. So what you're talking about is exactly what we do in the workshop. Like, one of the things we do is I have everybody draw a picture of their grief landscape.
Okay.
And I put on some very heart-opening music, and they sit and draw, and I don't tell them at all what to draw. It's, what does your grief look like to you? And a lot of times they'll draw a picture of the death event, mm-hmm. like a little stick figure shooting itself in the head, or whatever happened in their life. And then they go into small groups, and they talk to each other about their pictures, because it is important to tell your story and to be heard, but yep. you don't want to stop there. Yeah. So they get to tell their story for a little bit. And then we put those pictures on an altar. And everybody gathers around the altar and files past it and looks at everybody else's pictures mm-hmm. so that you can really see what a universal experience this is, that it's not just you and your story, but you're part of a much bigger thing because everybody has had loss. And then throughout the day, I mean, this is a four-hour thing, the way we move through it is the next step is we go and we take these pictures to another altar and we do a ritual with rose petals and pouring water to move the energy mm-hmm. from that energy of loss to the energy of growth. And then in the end, we take this bowl of rose petals and water, which is called, we call it a despacho, and we carry it outside and we pour it into the earth.
Nice.
So we give all of that energy to the earth where it will nurture and grow into something new. So just, it's all just symbolism.
Mm-hmm.
You can make up anything you want and do this, and it all works. And then we burn the pictures at the end.
Ah, very
good.
Just like you said. Very powerful, very powerful. So for anyone who's listening right now and they are paralyzed with grief, just, you know, look for those signs. Ask for them. Be open to them. I remember when I was so stuck in my grief, Terry, I had thought it had to come through a certain way. And so there were 75 other signs that I just didn't see or hear or want to see or hear because I had my, you know, communication, journalist, reporter mindset that it had to come through another medium's voice saying, your dad, Tim, is here. And he says, bleh. When, you know, all these other arrows were pointing to these incredible signs that until about a year later, I didn't see or absorb. So for anyone listening, there's some people out there just say, nope, I never get anything. And okay, even that energy of saying, nope, I never get anything is
always
going to prevent stuff from showing up. So what do you recommend that they do just tomorrow, this evening? Anyone who's listening to this podcast who's, you know, sort of entrenched in grief, how can they help loosen that lid?
Well, I'm glad you said that because it's a really good idea. I have a little document called 10 Tips for Talking to Heaven.
Okay. And is it on your website, danieldirect.net?
It's on afterlifeconference.com.
Okay, perfect.
And I'm just trying to think of what would be the easiest way to get it to everybody. It's on afterlifeconference.com, but you have to kind of
wiggle around
the pull-down menu. I have to search around for it. But if I could, perhaps I could give my email address out to your audience, and they can email me and ask me for it.
If you're okay with that, absolutely. What is your email?
Well, they can just send an email to office@afterlifeconference.com.
Okay, perfect.
And in the subject, just put "Talking to Heaven."
Talking to Heaven.
Write, please send me the 10 tips for talking to heaven. That is such, and that came directly channeled from my son.
Okay.
Several years ago, and people love this little piece. And it's a little exercise. There's 10 steps. Mm-hmm. And the biggest part of doing this exercise is learning how to trust what you receive, because what you say is absolutely correct. They say, I never hear from my dead person, except I do dream about them all the time. And you kind of want to smack them on the head and go, well, what do you think that is?
Hello. Yeah.
I have dreams and I find pennies and the hummingbirds, but I don't hear from him. And I think it's because Hollywood has conditioned us to expect apparitions and flying tables.
Sure.
And that's just what people expect. And just exactly like you said, it's not. That expectation really gets in the way.
Yeah, it does. I mean, think of an airplane trying to land. It's not going to land where there's chaos and negativity and fires. And, it needs the wide open field to find its spot. And so, be the wide open field. If that's what you want and if you're looking and seeking, just trust. There's more going on than we could ever know or imagine. And you will be shown something, I guarantee you. And I hope you go see Terry when she comes to Chicago, October 8th and 9th. And I look forward to meeting you in October and then again, continuing the dialogue, Terry. I think we have a lot of dots to connect, and it was wonderful getting to know you in this conversation. I really appreciate your time.
Well, thank you so much, and I hope we will meet in Chicago. That would be great. Come to the workshop.
Absolutely, yes. I'm a fan of Thomas, and I'm now a fan of yours from absorbing what you do. So to all the listeners out there, go grab a Terry Daniel book or go to afterlifeconference.com and especially office@afterlifeconference.com. Shoot her an email, and you can stay in touch with her that way. I'm JenWeigel.com. This has been I'm Spiritual, Damn It. And thanks to Joey Gelman for keeping us rolling here in the studio. And we will see you all next time. Terry, have a great one, and we will be in touch, okay?
Thank you, my friend.
Okay, blessings to you.